How do you create a culture of excellence? And what are the core principles that every business owner, every entrepreneur, franchisor, franchisee needs to adopt to build an amazing organization, an amazing business? Today, we're going to speak with Bob Berg, co-author of one of my favorite books, The Go-Giver. Bob, thank you for spending time with us. I really do appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So, I mentioned briefly for me, Go-Giver falls in the category for me as you go across my entrepreneurial journey with things like Traction, eMyth, Raving Fans, and Go-Giver. And it's funny when a great book concept touches you while you're going through your journey. I think I was in a mastermind group. Someone handed out your book, thought it was great. It's like everything else. You read it, you appreciate it, you forget, but then things activate in your head, right? And later on, when you think you've had all these great original thoughts, you realize there's these foundational truths, just foundational for what creates a great business.
Yeah. And by the way, thank you for those for that compliment to include John David Mann's in my book along with those others. Those are three of my all-time favorites. So I appreciate that more than you can imagine.
So Bob, some of the success principles in the Go-Giver, right? Value, law of compensation, value, delivering more than what the customers expect and delivering more than what they're paying. You know, as I reflect on my journey and some of our clients, it turns out when you dig deep into value and you become obsessed with not value in terms of dollars, but delivering and over-delivering and creating that special relationship and experience, it really transforms an organization.
Yeah. Well, first, you make a great point when you say value and not to be confused with dollars, because there's a big difference between price and value. And this is something very foundational that's so important. Price is a dollar figure. It's a dollar amount. It's finite. It simply is what it is. Value, on the other hand, is the relative worth or desirability of a thing, of something to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, service, concept, idea, system, philosophy, what have you, that brings so much worth or value to another human being that they will willingly exchange their, whether we want to say time, energy, money for it, and feel great that they did while you make a very healthy profit. And that's what we mean with law in law number one, the law of value, where we say your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. That doesn't mean you're losing money. No, it means you're both winning. So the franchisor and the franchisee are both winning because both are coming away better off afterwards than they were beforehand. And that's always the key.
Drawing from the example in your book, but also something that's probably came from your book, but something I discuss with my sons often when we pass a restaurant that's not doing well and the owner's there working every day, putting in the hours. Mm-hmm. And what scares me and what the conversation I'll have with one of my sons is, do they know they're not delivering value or they're underperforming or, you know, they know they're working hard. Are they making excuses or reasons why they're not succeeding? And extrapolating to myself, our franchise law firm, one of the things I'm always scared of is making sure like that guy or that business owner is not delivering value. Sometimes you don't know it.
Right.
And I'm like, I never want to be that person. How do you coach and work with business owners where, because there's a genuine point, I feel, when you hit real value, that obsession, you know, adding all these services and benefits, like how do you get a business owner really to reflect inward, to have an honest assessment if they're really delivering value?
Well, so first, and I just love what you bring up. That's so wonderful because it's everything when you think about it. And when we define value, right, as the relative worth, desirability to the end user, well, that's the thing. Value is always in the eyes of the beholder, okay? It's what they believe is of value, not what you or I believe is of value, that restaurant owner, what they believe is of value, what we think that other person, what that customer should feel is of value, doesn't count. The only thing that counts is what they believe is of value. When you think about it, in a free market-based economy, not that we're totally free market, but to the point that we are, right? Meaning, when I say free market, I simply mean no one is forced to do business with anyone else, okay? So to the degree that we live in a free market economy, I often say this, nobody's going to buy from you. And I'm talking about whether it's that customer driving by the restaurant who chooses to drive by to another restaurant instead of stopping at this one that you're talking about, or the potential franchisee who decides to either buy, invest in, or not invest in. Okay. Nobody's going to do business with you because you have a quota to meet. They're not going to do business with you because you would like the sale to happen. And they're not even going to do business with you just because you're a nice human being. They're going to do business with you because they believe that ultimately they will be better off by doing so than by not doing so, which means that they find more value in this proposition than not. Okay, that's what it comes down to. So whether we're talking about that little restaurant owner, right, who's just that, you know, five-person show and is wondering why they're not doing the kind of business they're doing, even though they're working so hard, or that major franchise, it all comes back to is my potential customer, client, franchisee, are they finding value in my offering that is so compelling that they are going to choose to do business with me? And that's why it's always, I always say we need to be internally motivated, but externally focused, because we've got to know what they believe is of value.
And I think it, you know, from an exercise standpoint, it's really helpful when, as a team, leadership teams articulating what that value is, the transformation you offer. And so this applies for franchisors. For me, when we're working with franchisors and we're talking about delivering value for franchisees and those franchise sales, for us, it's always focus on what are the unit level economics, what's the ROI potential we're giving them, and what's the culture, right, that our organization offers. Something that I've learned, when you think you're delivering great value, there's always room for more. Like, it's a never-ending process of really going. And what I appreciate, your second law, which is interesting how they work together, right? So law of value and then the law of compensation, which is, right? And I think, and this is why I was thinking about this morning, I've read your book multiple times. My younger son's started an internship. He's in college. And I'm like, boy, I love that second rule, the law of compensation, which you make a great analogy between the teacher. And I think, it's so powerful because it's all about scalability.
It says your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So our law number one says to give more in value than you take in payment. Law number two says, tells us that the more people whose lives we touch with the exceptional value we provide, the more money with which we'll be rewarded.
Right. And that scalability is...
Oh, it's key. Sure. Absolutely.
And those two reinforce each other. It's funny, Bob. Like, it's great. I'm having all these revelations while we're on this conversation, but I'm also having flashbacks to about 10 years ago sitting in a mastermind when someone handed me this book, right? Let's putting these two laws together, right? Delivering value and then the law of compensation. You need to achieve scalability, client base, broadcasting. And what's interesting is when you do that, I find you deliver more value, because to distribute further, right, and to increase that pool of people that benefit and you're helping, chances are you need to deliver more value, refine your systems, build better systems. I mean, even just reflecting on the organization you've built, not only your book, but your coaching and your programs, that's scaling out and touching people.
Yeah. Yeah, so very important, and that is where, you know, Nicole Martin, who was the teacher in the story, the one.
Yes, yeah.
And she gave the example that when she was a school teacher, and you know, she loved her job, she loved the kids, she loved what she did. The parents loved her. It was wonderful, but she was only able to add value to a finite number of people. So that's when she came up with her learning system for children, which was an online type of learning program and so forth. And it was able to expand it to now touch the lives of millions and millions of people with that exceptional value. And indeed, as she scaled, she had to find more ways and more ways opened to bring more value to more people. So, yeah, I think you make a great point.
Well, no, it's your point. And I mean, and that's the power of franchising, right? Which is. Yeah. Our clients are amazing founders, right? And then along the way, they just keep adding more value and scaling, and the system grows and the franchisees do well.
And you know, I love, one of the things I love about, you know, when it comes to franchising is the system itself. Right. Because, you know, I personally, and I, you know, I define terms all the time. So because I always believe you need to come from a premise where it starts, right? The foundation from which everything else evolves. So I personally define a system as the process of predictably achieving a goal based on a logical and specific set of how-to principles. The key being predictability, right? So if it's been proven that by doing A, you'll get the desired result of B, you know that all you need to do is A and continue to do A and you'll get the desired results of B. And I love how franchises offer that to people who are entrepreneurs who want to get into business. They want to be in business, and yet they also need the support. They need the system. They want that how-to. They want that predictability that if they do X, they're going to accomplish Y.
It struck me too. I was looking at some of my notes. I'm like, okay, law of value for sure. We're a professional services organization, consulting. We're about to launch our new software system, cloud-based system for our clients and stuff. So we're focused on value. But, you know, it struck me, I look at some of my older notes. I'm like, in terms of law of compensation, touching lives, it's really the reason we do these podcasts, which has been so transformative for me, because it's like, Bob, I can't tell you, the amount of people, the lives we touch, probably this big compared to the reach you've had, the positive reach, but there's nothing more amazing than someone contacting you and telling you how your videos and how we helped out their organization. We didn't do anything. So, and I feel like there's so much opportunity for franchisors out there, entrepreneurs that have good value and great systems, but they're not leveraging the law of compensation. They're not, you know, they're holding themselves back because I feel like they could be touching more lives.
Yeah. And I think it also has to do too, in terms of recognizing that while systems are very important, systems are key, the systems are there to serve, right? Not to be the master, right? So a good system is there to serve the user. And too often, I think we as human beings will get caught up when there's a really good system that works, of thinking the system is the end, where it really isn't. It's the means to the end. And this is where people skills come in. And this is where really the law of influence, law number three, comes into play. Law of influence says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Now, let me just qualify that if I may, because when we say place other people's interests first, we don't mean you should be anyone's doormat or a martyr or self-sacrificial in any way. Absolutely not at all. It's simply, as Joe, the protege in the story, learned from several of the mentors, the golden rule of business, of sales, what have you, is simply that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to and allow themselves to be led and influenced by those people they know, like, and trust. And there's no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you in others than by genuinely moving from that I focus or me focus to that other focus, looking to, as Sam, one of the mentors in the story, advised Joe, make your win all about the other person's win.
Yeah, it's just so interesting how it all comes together. Mm-hmm. In terms of, I'm reflecting on one of our core values is we measure our wins through client wins, right? Mm-hmm. But it is about, as an organization, I'm in the process of reading a book, Unreasonable Hospitality. So, and the author, you know, is a restaurateur and talking about, you know, what it took to build a great organization and Danny Meyer and, you know, working his experience with them. And one of the things that struck me is these great restaurants, how the service and the experience, they're putting their customers first. And when they do that, ironically, their organization transforms and becomes very special. So, you know, and what I also find is your law of influence, putting the interests of others first, it also forces you as a team to focus on your products, your services, your systems, which then gets to your value. Mm-hmm. And all these things just reinforce themselves so powerful.
Yeah. And, you know, when you say about, you know, placing your interest in that other person first, there's nothing Pollyanna about whatsoever. You know, as John David Mann and I, we say in the follow-up book to the Go Givers Sell More, we make the quote that money is simply an echo of value, right? Money is an echo of value. It's the thunder, if you will, to values lightning. John made that one up because I'm not smart enough to come up with something.
That's a good quote, though, too. Like,
But that's really when you think about it, right? Because again, it all goes back to people are going to buy for their reasons, not our reasons. So when our focus is on the value that we're providing another person, right? That's when we create that, what we call benevolent context for success. There's nothing touchy-feely about it. There's nothing woo-woo about it. It's just, this is how free markets work. We are there to please the customer. Right? We're there to provide value to them. So when you focus on the value, right, the money comes as a result. The money is simply a result of the value you've provided to others.
Yeah. And there's definitely nothing subservient there. The example of, I can't tell you how proud I am that our clients, when they're so satisfied, because then all of a sudden they're honoring your team and your business and what you do as an organization. A bad experience for a client, for me, in addition to the client not having, I feel bad I let down our team.
Of course.
Our systems and our...
Sure.
So it's so powerful. I think so many businesses that aren't getting it right make excuses, and they don't recognize that ultimately it is the consumer that decides. Mm-hmm. And it's a pure mechanism. And you've said it's not pure, but the market will figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then we go to your fourth law of authenticity, which I love, because at first I'm like, I don't know how it fits in, but talk to us a little about it.
Yeah. So the law of authenticity says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. And in this part of the story, one of the mentors, it was Deborah, she shared a very important lesson she learned, and that is, all the skills in the world, the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, as important as they are, and they are all very, very important, they're also all for naught if you don't come at it from your true, authentic core. But when you do, when you show up as yourself day after day, week after week, month after month, people feel good about you. They feel comfortable with you. They feel safe with you. And why wouldn't they? They know who they're getting. And this taps into a very powerful law that Dr. Robert Cialdini talked about in his classic Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. And that is the law of consistency, that as human beings, we have a need to appear and be consistent, okay? But we demand it of others in terms of those we trust. It's difficult to create trust It is difficult to sustain trust when you're not consistent, because as human beings, and this, you know, of course, goes back to our cave person ancestors, when consistency was a matter of survival, you had to know what was what, where was where, who was it, right? And had to be the same, had to be consistent. Well, we don't have those same survival issues today, but it's been hardwired into our DNA. So we want to make sense of our world. And this is in a world that often doesn't make sense. And so when we can be consistent, which is a huge part of authenticity, right? Mm-hmm. Now we are really nine steps ahead of the game in a 10-step game. But I do want to mention this, because I think the, and I don't know if this is since social media has really become all-encompassing or what have you, but it seems as though authenticity has sort of taken on a whole new definition of just say or do whatever you please, because, you know, there's no boundaries, just it's all authentic and that's good. You know, I don't buy into that, because, you know, that's like the person who says, well, I have anger issues and I yell at people all the time, and if I were to act any differently, that wouldn't be authentic of me. That's baloney, right? It simply means that person has an authentic problem.
Right. An authentic ego issue.
Work on, right? In order to be an authentically better, higher, more effective human being. So, I don't think that that's authenticity. I think authentic, when it comes right down to it, authenticity is acting congruently with your values. And when you do that, you're authentic. And that's when you're on the right track.
Well, and your statement about consistency, I think what makes it so powerful is you can't fake consistency. Either you are or you aren't. And when clients or customers, they experience inconsistency, it's a red flag.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And rightfully so, because there's something wrong in your systems and what you're doing. And that's okay, too. But you need to fix it, yeah. Right? And you need to embrace that friction. But yeah, no, consistency you can't fake.
And that's one great thing about systems is you know, consistency is baked into a good functional system.
Bob, I have to tell you, I'm excited as we're having the conversation, because it's, you know, it's aligning many things for me, one of which I'm honed in on the law of influence, but the fifth is the law of receptivity. Yeah. So
yeah, this one says that the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. So this is sort of the paradoxical one, right? You know, it's that as John says, it's the thumb to the four fingers. What this really means is nothing more than understanding that, yeah, you breathe out, you also have to breathe in, right? You breathe out carbon dioxide, you breathe in oxygen, you breathe out, which is giving of value, you breathe in, which is receiving of value. Giving and receiving are not opposite concepts, despite what the world around us tries to tell us, right? That's not. Giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same coin, and they work in tandem. Unfortunately, the world around us gives us so many, I won't even say mixed messages, but very negative messages when it comes to money, when it comes to business, when it comes to abundance. There are so many anti-prosperity messages out there that it can really get into a person's unconscious, because they take these in from the top, from, you know, combination of upbringing, environment, schooling, news media, television shows, movies, popular culture. So all these negative messages of lack. So it's difficult for people, even when they have done all the right things, to often allow themselves to receive, because in their minds, again, in their unconscious, they may be thinking that there's something wrong with money, or that, you know, how many times have they heard that to be really wealthy, you've got to step on people's toes and be ruthless and be hard. Now, it's a big world. There's people who do things in a way that are not what we would agree with. But 99.9% of the time, and especially, again, to the degree that no one is forced to do business with you, you can only earn great wealth by providing exceptional value to the lives of many people, placing their interests first and coming at it from your authentic core on a consistent level.
So Bob, receiving, doing more, for me, what really touched is this journey. I feel like this is a process that never ends. And you really need to be challenging yourself all the time on the value you're delivering, the people you're touching, how you're influencing and broadcasting and building those networks. I think on your website, you have a good little chart, this round circle, that really summarizes everything well. But what's your advice to entrepreneurs, business owners? How do they build that foundation and just keep pushing and create? Because there's that point where you don't get the results till you give that 101%. How do you get them to the tipping point? Like, how should we be navigating and focusing on this?
I think it begins with having a culture of excellence. It begins there.
Okay.
And you know what, and we ask, what is excellence? And there are so many ways to be excellent, right? It's the mastery of your art, the mastery of your craft. It's always understanding that you need to keep getting better. It's how you make others feel during every touch point. You know, it's whether it's your employees, whether it's your franchisees, and it's their customers and so forth. It's making sure it's always looking to see that every single touch point that everyone hits, there's value in it, that they feel good about themselves. And as they feel good about themselves, they'll feel good about the company that they're doing business with. But I think that is the culture. That's got to be the forefront, and it can't be a sometimes thing. It has to absolutely be immersed. It has to be part of the DNA.
I love that. I was not expecting that answer either. That's so powerful. Again, one of the books I mentioned earlier, you know, I didn't understand that the genesis of the word cult comes from culture. Right. And, you know, and one of the, and I, sometimes when people refer to our team, and we all have our Entrepreneurs Kick-Ass t-shirts on Fridays, and but when they refer to it as a cult, I'm like, I like that, right? Because there is that culture, but that culture of excellence is so important, because it's your team that touches the customers and creates the relationship. And my big fear always is the things you don't hear, if someone's disappointed. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's that culture of excellence that you're referring to that creates those antenna where team sense it or see it and they react on it. Mm-hmm. I think that's so critical.
Oh, thank you. And you know, I mean, I think part of, and you bring up that great point, a big part of that culture is a learning culture. And that is that leadership from the top and trickling down has got to make sure people know they are welcome to provide their ideas, that their ideas are going to be heard. Doesn't mean every idea is a great idea or every complaint is this or every whatever is that, but it means that the ego is not in question. It's simply a matter of how do we make this entire operation better? Right. And if we, you know, if we look at it that way, now we're open at least to when ideas come in. And again, people know that it's expected. I love Ray Dalio's book, Principles, where he talks about the entire culture in his organization. People were expected to let other people know when something was wrong. Now, they did it respectfully. Right. They did it in a way that considered the other person's feelings. But truth was paramount. And it was absolutely expected, and it was looked down upon if you did not let someone, even in a higher position, if you will, know when something needed to be called out. But again, yeah, no, that, go out of the picture when that's the case.
No, I'm gonna your reference to a culture of excellence is gonna be in my thoughts for the next Bob, I don't know if it's appropriate, but the cover of your book, anything behind that in terms of how that came about?
Well, the publisher came up with that. So, and it's such a good publishing house, portfolio, Penguin Random House. Mercury, or Hermes, depending upon whether Roman or Greek, who either one was the god of delivery or gifts. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Bob, I can't thank you enough. It's interesting. As I spoke to my team, I'm like, every interaction with you was a reflection of all the principles in your book. And yeah, and it's such a beautiful thing to see. And, it's great because entrepreneurs transform lives, and just watching you on LinkedIn and transforming the lives of others. And again, just interacting with you, like, reaffirms, like, whatever's behind this book is genuine. And so I appreciate that very much.
It's a wonderful compliment. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.